and thanks for joining us on Chicago Tonight. I'm Brandis Friedman. Here's what we're looking at. State lawmakers weigh in on the budget process as the deadline to pass a spending plan approaches. Former President Biden announces his prostate cancer diagnosis, a local doctor on what you should know about getting screened. And Chicago's beloved Piping Plovers are officially expecting. We have the latest. And now to some of today's top stories. The U.S. Department of Justice says it's investigating the city of Chicago's hiring practices to determine if they violate the Civil Rights Act. In a letter to Mayor Brandon Johnson sent today, the DOJ points to remarks he made at a church yesterday, highlighting the number of senior-level positions in his administration filled by a black person. The department questions if the city is involved in a pattern or practice of racial discrimination. In response, the mayor's office says it's, quote, proud to have the most diverse administration in the history of our city. Our administration reflects the diversity and values of Chicago. Unfortunately, the current federal administration does not reflect either. After weeks of speculation, Congresswoman Lauren Underwood announces she will not run for Dick Durbin's Senate seat. She made the announcement in an interview just hours ago on CNN.
When I reflected on the way that I could best serve families in Illinois and around the country, I really decided to stay in the House of Representatives. I'm in leadership and to help the D-Trip as we seek to reclaim the majority.
In the interview, Underwood also addressed an NBC Chicago report that Governor J.B. Pritzker was trying to deter her from running for the Senate seat. When asked whether the governor had pushed her out of the race, she replied, quote, absolutely not. The governor has also denied discouraging anyone from entering the primary. Pritzker has endorsed Lieutenant Governor Juliana Stratton in the Senate race. Representatives Raja Krishnamoorthy and Robin Kelly have also announced they are running. Cook County's top prosecutor is renewing calls for a new state law that would define attacks on reproductive health care centers as terrorism. It comes days after a California fertility clinic was bombed. Cook County State's Attorney Eileen O'Neill Burke is calling on Illinois lawmakers to pass a bill that would amend the terrorism article of the state's criminal code to include language protecting reproductive health care facilities. Authorities say a 25-year-old man detonated a car bomb Saturday that injured four people and damaged a fertility clinic in Palm Springs, California. According to authorities, the man the FBI believes was responsible left behind, quote, anti-pro-life writings before carrying out an attack investigators called terrorism. ComEd customers might notice an increase in their bills this summer, starting in a couple of weeks. The watchdog group Citizens Utility Board, or CUB, says there may be a silver lining, but still blames the increase on poor policies.
Customers could easily end up paying well over $100 extra on their power bills over the next 12 months. And the infuriating fact is that this was a completely preventable situation. Unfortunately, this price spike is because of years of bad policy at the regional power grid operator for ComEd territory. That's a little known organization called PJM Interconnection.
CUB says it expects ComEd's utility supply rate for June through September to be about 45% more than what it was last June. But a credit through the Climate and Equitable Jobs Act will provide some relief, reducing that cost by about 17%. The group says the increase is caused by the soaring cost of reserve power and urges the utility to work with customers struggling to afford their bills this summer. Among the gifts Vice President J.D. Vance gave the Pope during his visit today, a personalized Chicago Bears jersey.
This, of course, is a Chicago Bears jersey.
Good choice.
With your name.
I can probably imagine.
In the United States, people are extremely excited about you.
Vance delivered the jersey bearing the name Pope Leo, along with a letter from President Donald Trump and an invitation to the White House. The Veep, who converted to Catholicism in 2019, led the U.S. delegation, which included Secretary of State Marco Rubio, to the pontiff's first formal mass yesterday. For more on their meeting, you can visit our website. Up next, state lawmakers on the fast-approaching end of session, right after this.
Chicago Tonight is made possible in part by the Alexandra and John Nichols family, the Jim and Kay Mabee family, the Polk Brothers Foundation, and the support of these donors.
It's crunch time in Springfield, with the deadline to pass the state budget for next fiscal year less than 2 weeks away. Lawmakers are working to hammer out a balanced spending plan amid federal funding uncertainties and mounting pressure from agencies asking for more money. The governor's office is also projecting state revenues to be over $500 million less than expected in February when he proposed his budget plan. Here with more on how the budget process is going are Democratic State Representative LaShawn Ford, and on Zoom, Republican State Senator Don DeWitt. Gentlemen, thanks to you both for joining us. So you're already kind of far along in this process, right? Only recently finding out that revenue estimates are shorter than they were predicted to be in February. Sales tax income is down $150 million. Federal dollars for programs like Medicaid and Medicare down $278 million. And corporate income tax is down $88 million. And as we mentioned, the governor's office had already projected a $500 million shortfall. What is your reaction to these shortfalls? Representative Ford, I'll start with you.
Brandis, I think that the governor and the leaders are doing a good job looking at the uncertainty of Washington. They had to readjust their revenue forecast and had to go down in the projections because of the possible recession. So the governor and the Speaker of the House and the President of the Senate, they've been doing a great job watching the market, watching the federal funds that's coming in, and making sure that we're prepared to take care of families in Illinois, regardless to how devastating Congress is acting toward Illinois.
Senator DeWitt, same question to you. What do you think? What's your reaction when you hear about these shortfalls?
Well, I don't know that there's any significant dollars that have actually been accounted for that have been withheld by the federal government. There was some federal dollars, some programs that were discontinued, pandemic-driven programs that were used to allow food pantries to acquire locally grown products here in Illinois. But that program was probably going away anyway with the pandemic finally coming to an end. Look, it's no surprise that there are significant revenue shortfalls. We knew back in February, and we made it clear that the day before the governor's budget address in February, there was a $3 billion deficit in the revenue stream. Miraculously, the day before, that number shrank to $1 billion. The reality is that's where it actually stands today. The governor's talking about a $500 million shortfall in revenue, but there's actually another $470 million in tax increases that are incorporated into this new budget. He's still $1 billion short on revenue, and it's time for the governor to start tightening his belt when it comes to protecting the taxpayers of Illinois.
So here's a bit of what Governor Pritzker said last week about the state's budget challenges.
This is certainly a tough year, but I will remind you that if you look around the country, every state is facing this challenge right now. It's partly because of the slowdown or the expected slowdown of the overall economy since the new administration came into office.
So, Senator DeWitt, how much of these budget challenges do you think can be attributed to the Trump administration's changes and movements?
Well, I don't think any of the proposed challenges that the governor is suggesting can be attributed to the change of administration in Washington right now. Again, like I mentioned, when we sat with the governor's own Office of Management and Budget during appropriation hearings the last 2 to 3 weeks, I specifically asked his director, can you attribute any dollars that have been withheld from the state of Illinois for federal programs? The only one she could assign or relay was that federal fund to acquire food for food banks across the state of Illinois. Medicare is looking at some potential cuts, but frankly, I think that's something that every state, specifically Illinois, needs to be looking at when it comes to the waste and fraud that occurs in Medicaid spending here in Illinois. I don't have a problem with the federal government looking at every single dollar being spent on those federal programs right now. And what's going to be important is whether the governor chooses to respond to those in a financially responsible manner or whether he's just going to continue to gin up his support base as he continues to run for president and decide that he's going to make that an issue when one really doesn't exist.
Well, I tell you, it's clear that the president's tariffs has caused the consumer, the business community, and the market to be worried and alarmed, and that slows down any economy, and it hurts our economy here in Illinois. And so Washington, the Republican Congress people and senators, they're hurting the economy because they won't stand up to this administration. Illinois is already a donor state where we send more money to Washington than we return. So I think that it's unfair that our senator here doesn't recognize that we actually are being hurt by President Trump's policies.
Representative Ford, some Democrats, of course, are also pushing for additional funding for various programs that may not be possible without tax increases. And I think a lot of voters and constituents probably want to know what kind of tax increases might be possible.
Well, we hope that we don't have to raise taxes on people, but our goal is to work through this budget and do everything that we can to take care of families in Illinois. We know that we've lost, I chair higher ed appropriations, and we've lost almost $300 million in federal money from this administration alone. And that's a problem. $300 million, that impacts our students going to college, to our public universities. And, you know, we know that the people that suffer from opioid challenges, substance use disorders, there are nonprofits out here. It's not just our universities, but there are nonprofits that's partnering with the state to take care of the most vulnerable people, the homeless population. Their funds have been cut. And so we have a problem because the federal government has our economy in an uncertain state.
And meanwhile, agencies like the Regional Transit Authority and Chicago Public Schools are calling on the state to provide more funds. Senator DeWitt, I'll come to you on this one first. What is the likelihood of the state coming to the rescue for those?
Well, I think regarding the RTA specifically, I think what we are looking at are potential new revenue streams that can help solve the problems that the RTA is currently having. There's no question that the pandemic significantly reduced the number of travelers using mass transit across Chicago every day, and federal dollars that were appropriated through ARPA funding have dried up. Very similar to the situation we are now facing here in Illinois. Those federal dollars that were granted the state of Illinois have now dried up. And for years, we've been cautioning the governor that we have to start tightening our belt. Instead, he went ahead and incorporated those revenues into operations and administrative programming that now there's no revenue around to support. My friend, Representative Sean's comments, you know, we are 47th in the nation with regards to our economic stability. We have one of the highest unemployment rates in the nation. Those aren't problems created in Washington, D.C. Those are problems created right here by the governor, who continues to spend every dollar he can get his hands on. A 32% increase in the state budget since he came into office in 2019. My life is not 40% better. My friends, neighbors' lives are not 40% better. But the state of Illinois is continuing to spend every dollar they can get their hands on.
Senator, we've got about 25 seconds left. I'm going to give Representative Ford a chance to respond to that.
It's important to note that our FY25 budget had no ARPA money in it. We ran our budget without any federal money from the COVID fund. So I think it's just important to note that if you are a regular person and you're not a part of the 1%, the Republicans in Washington, they're going to hurt you. And they're going to cut your food, they're going to cut your health, they're going to cut education. And I think we have to stand up to the Republicans in Washington.
All right. I'm guessing Senator DeWitt probably has a different feeling on that, but we'll have to get that next time we have the two of you here. We're out of time. Thanks to you both, Representative LaShawn Ford and Senator Don DeWitt. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Up next, former President Biden's diagnosis puts a renewed spotlight on prostate cancer. Former President Joe Biden has seen an outpouring of support following an announcement that he has prostate cancer. The 82-year-old shared his diagnosis on Sunday, calling it, quote, aggressive, and adding that it's spread to his bones. The American Cancer Society says about 1 in 8 men will receive the same diagnosis in their lifetime, and doctors are reminding patients how to catch it early. Joining us with more now is Dr. Hitan Patel, a urologic oncologist at Northwestern Medicine. Dr. Patel, thank you for joining us.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
So we mentioned 1 in 8 men will be diagnosed with this. Give us a sense. How common is prostate cancer, especially among men former President Biden's age?
Yeah, prostate cancer is very common. If you live long enough, most men are going to get prostate cancer, but it doesn't mean that it's going to be one that needs to be found or is going to be aggressive. But we do try to find aggressive cancers and those that have family histories or significant histories or as early as we can.
The announcement from Biden's office said that his cancer is aggressive and that he is a 9 on the Gleason scale. Explain for us, please, what that means and what it indicates.
Yeah, we quantify how aggressive a prostate cancer is primarily by the grade, also called the Gleason grade. The modern grade group system we use usually goes from 1 through 5 to be more intuitive, but the old school numbers went through 6 through 10. So he had a Gleason score 9 on the old group, but that's a 5 on the current system, so the highest you can have. And so those that are 4 or 5 on this scale have a higher risk of spreading, and usually to the lymph node or bones. And unfortunately, his is in the bones, which means he's at a stage 4.
Does that grade also have any indication for what kind of treatments might or might not be pursued?
Yeah, and many high-risk prostate cancers, grade group 4 and 5, actually are still localized to the prostate. So they could be potentially cured with radiation or surgery. But we think of metastatic cancers as ones that we can control, but not usually cure. So treatment for men with metastatic prostate cancer, like what's been described that President Biden may have, usually it's hormonal therapy. And so hormonal therapy, also called androgen deprivation therapy, is treatments that can be an injection or a medication that can lower a man's testosterone levels to lower castrate levels. And that helps shrink or keep the prostate cancer from spreading. And that can work actually very well for a long time. But like I mentioned, it's not generally curable in most cases. And there are other things you can do as well. But that's the mainstay of treatment is hormone therapy.
And when you say for a long time, for an 82-year-old with cancer, with metastatic cancer, what's a long time?
Yeah, it can still be years. So a lot of men that even have metastatic or advanced prostate cancers may be able to control it with the new therapies, at least in the last 10 years. Hormone therapy has gotten even better. We try not to use it because we want to cure men before they have metastasis. But when you have it, it can be years, where as long as it's responding to the hormone therapy, it can stay under control, where a lot of men will actually die of other natural causes rather than the prostate cancer when it's caught or treated appropriately.
What does this mean then for the quality of life for someone with that? Obviously, it can be treated, but what's it going to be like for him?
Yeah, I think for someone who has a metastatic prostate cancer, the hormone therapy really does cause, sometimes menopause-like symptoms, hot flashes, fatigue. Those are things that are pretty common, but can be controlled, and some men may not have as bad of side effects as others. But generally, we think of it as potentially less side effects than something like chemotherapy or other therapies you might think of for metastatic cancers to have. But there are roles for those therapies as well. It's just hormone therapy in general will cause that. And it can also make your bones a little more fragile. So things like keeping calcium up and keeping bone health is very important, and medical oncologists help manage that.
What kind of factors are taken into consideration when doctors are deciding on a treatment plan?
Yeah, I think first is just, is it localized or not? Because if it's localized to the prostate, that's going to take us down one pathway of attempting cure. If it's not localized to the prostate, then we have to think about, well, what's the man's life expectancy? Are there other medical problems that might outweigh this problem? Hormone therapy, I think, is still a mainstay of treatment. But we can intensify treatment, and it really depends on their general other health. And so there are many men who are very healthy, active, that we can, go in more intense on treatment, and we'll extend their lives. And hopefully the goal is that they die of something else before this is what causes death.
Biden's cancer, stage 4, and we often hear with cancer, early detection is key, and that's the key to catching it. Would that have helped here? Because surely he was having regular health screenings.
Yeah, I think the current paradigm is that if men are in their 50s to 70s is probably the best time to diagnose or find prostate cancer. And ideally, we're trying to find it localized. Doesn't mean it happens. There are younger men who have metastatic prostate cancer. That can be in their 50s, even in their 40s. Men with risk factors that are Black or have family history or genetic risk factors, they may want to start in their 40s. So screening is important and can prevent metastasis, but not all the time. Even men who have been treated for localized prostate cancers may have a recurrence. But I would say that there are things you can do to help find it early. A PSA blood test, which is a simple blood test primary care doctors may be doing, can be done early on and can find these. But even if you are getting screened, generally guidelines say to stop at age 70. I think that's appropriate for most people, but when you're, you know, very healthy or you're going to live a long time, it may be something we can adjust. You know, 75, 80, it's not unreasonable depending on your life expectancy. A lot of these cancers, unfortunately, take 10, 20 years before they're going to cause any trouble. And so if you were diagnosed early, we can treat them, but if you're not sure, if you have a 10, 20 year life expectancy, or doctors think you have other medical problems, it may cause you more harm than good to treat them. And so a lot of times we're not looking for it unless it's more aggressive.
What do folks need to know about you? And you just touched on some of it about when to screen, but also what questions to ask.
Yeah, I think men in their 50s, you know, 50 to 70 would be the ideal time to ask, hey, could I do a PSA blood test? That's the simplest thing to start with. And if you have risk factors, at age 40, getting a baseline value is not unreasonable. If the number is less than one, that's a good factor to know. It does involve just a blood test to start. Most men are going to need nothing else. It's going to be a reassuring test. A digital rectal exam is something that most men, you know, may hesitate on, but it's not actually required for prostate cancer screening, even though it can help. And so that is optional. But the blood test, I think, is a good idea to initiate the conversation. And we have good tools as urologists that if someone needed to see us, we can nowadays make more rational decisions because of these other tests we have, like getting imaging, which was not a standard 10 years ago. So last 10 years, a lot of treatment, not just for advanced prostate cancers, but just finding the right ones and finding them early is out there.
Okay. And you addressed the one that I wanted to be sure we got to, because a lot of men are concerned about the digital rectal exam that you mentioned, but you got to it. And that's where we'll have to leave it. Dr. Ethan Patel, thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, no problem. Thank you.
Up next, an update on Chicago's two most famous beachgoers. But first, a look at the weather. Chicago's beloved piping plovers are back and officially expecting. See what I did there? Imani and Sea Rocket were reunited at Montrose Beach barely a week ago and are not wasting any time getting reconnected. Our Patty Wetley joins us now with more. So let's back things up, Patty. Remind us why the plovers breeding in this area is such a big deal in the first place.
Yeah, I know that there's people out there who are like, why with the plovers all the time? But remember, they're a listed endangered species. There's only a couple hundred of them across the entire Great Lakes. Back in the 80s, they were down to maybe only a dozen breeding pairs. Today, their stronghold is up north in Michigan by Sleeping Bear Dunes. So the fact that Monty and Rose back in 2019 found each other on a beach in Chicago, the third biggest city in the U.S., is amazing. And the fact that they continue to return and that their offspring have found love here, that's pretty cool. Endangered species on a Chicago beach. That's a big deal.
That is pretty cool. So what is the latest then with Imani and Sea Rocket?
So yes, Imani and Sea Rocket, we know they have one egg. Plovers tend to usually have a clutch of eggs of four. And they can lay an egg like maybe every day, every other day. So a few more days, we'll know if we're going to get a full clutch. And then I would expect maybe sometime by the end of June, middle end of June, we might see something hatch.
Some hatchlings. All right. So, and this is not the pair's first year breeding. Remind
Correct.
Us how last year went.
Yeah, last year they had four chicks. Only one of them, Nagamo, survived. And we're still waiting to see if Nagamo, we don't know what gender they are, and if they do come back. Sometimes your first year birds, their first migration, they arrive a little bit later. So there's also some plovers up further north in Illinois on a private beach in Waukegan. Blaze and Pepper also were first-time parents last year. They're back. We're waiting for an announcement on their nesting success and if any of their chicks from last year make it back. So more excitement. We could have a plover explosion in
an
Illinois.
An explosion of plovers,
yes.
Right. So other plovers, as you've mentioned, across the Great Lakes,
yes.
They've been nesting too.
Yeah.
When are these eggs expected to hatch? What are we?
You know, some of them got busy pretty fast. They got back fast and laid eggs fast. So we might have some of those starting toward the end of this month. We'll see.
We'll see. Okay. Yes. I think we're all looking forward to it. I know that you will remain on Plover Watch for us for Plover-rama, Plover-mania. We've got to come up with something cool.
Yes.
Okay, Patty Whiteley, thank you so much. And you can read Patty's full story on our website. It's all at WTTW.com/news. And that's our show for this Monday night. Join us tomorrow night at 5:30 and 10. Now, for all of us here at Chicago Tonight, I'm Brandis Friedman. Thank you for watching. Stay healthy and safe, and have a good night.
Closed captioning is made possible by Robert A. Clifford and Clifford Law Offices, a Chicago personal injury and wrongful death firm that supports educational initiatives in the legal profession.